Yep, due to a collaborative effort by linguists and information technologists, a great big inventory of language in Australia, called the AusNC, or more properly, the Australian National Corpus, has now been launched, and we was there recording the event so that you can be part of it as well, since the AusNC really belongs to all of us. So without further ado, here's the linguist Kate Burridge launching the AusNC at a scholarly information futures session at Griffith University in Brisbane.
I remember very, very vividly the meeting on the 4th of July in 2008. It was the Australian Linguistics Conference, Society Conference, and we were all huddled together in this overcrowded room to hear Cliff Goddard and Michael Hoare talk about this possibility of, this exciting possibility of a national corpus of language. So the idea of a collection of language samples, much like the American National Corpus or the British National Corpus, except of course it was, the idea at first anyway, was Australian English. But it wasn't long before, you know, it was quite clear that what was being hatched at that meeting were plans for something a lot more ambitious. Clearly, the Australian National Corpus, or AusNC as it's now fondly called, had to be multimodal. You know, not just simply the text-based collections that were of these other two Northern Hemisphere collections, but high-quality audio-visual recordings as well. So that enabled us to capture spoken language, written language, and, of course, electronically mediated communication. But then there was the thinking, too, that just look at the variation out there in language. We had to look at all sorts of different groups, you know, ethnic groups or different regional groups, age-related groups, social groups. So suddenly AusNC started to look very, very big. And then by the end of the meeting, we're all agreeing that, of course, it had to encompass language much more broadly. So we had to have, you know, Australian Indigenous languages, Australian Sign Language, and the community languages of migrants, so Greek or Italian or Vietnamese, for example. So it was looking, you know, AusNC was looking like a colossal task ahead. And I remember wondering whether this feeling in the room, this you know, clear passion, this excitement, must have been something like was in the at the meeting, this famous November meeting of the PhilSoc, the Philological Society, in 1857, when Trench and Furnival and Coleridge, that's right, when Coleridge, they got up and they expressed their dissatisfaction with existing dictionaries. And the cry was out for something, I suppose, an inventory of language, something that would chart the life story of words. And it was a whopping task, you know, particularly given the time that we're talking in the 1800s. I mean, obviously, they're very, very different beasts, the Oxford English Dictionary, the OED, or AusNC. You'll be encountering a lot of acronyms and initialisms. But as initiatives, they do share, or they did share, two ideals, I suppose. One was the historic orientation and the other the democratic approach. The cry, as I said, in the 1800s was for this, you know, inventory of language that would chart the career span of words. So all words, you know, old ones, archaic ones, obsolete ones, new ones, respectable ones, not so respectable ones, scruffy ones, although I don't think all the scruffy ones made it. I'm not quite sure how much the OED in its early days was able to live up to this descriptive ideal. But and in the case of AusNC, yes, indeed it was a, you know, historical right from the start. And already we have a couple of collections that are, you know, of considerable historical significance, and I'll mention those in a moment. But it was also the idea that well, although I should emphasise, though, at this point, the idea from the start was not that it should be purely archival. As Simon Musgrave described recently, the idea was also that AusNC would attract new collections, perhaps even commission collections that would fill, perhaps, you know, gaps that were there. So the idea, again, of charting, you know, language in Australia across time. But like the OED, there was, you know, no you know, hard and fast rules about what to include or what not to include. So it would be language in all its glory, written texts, all sorts of different kinds, videoed interaction, transcripts of speech, perhaps, you know, with the audio files if they were available, and e-communication, e-speak, blogs and tweets and emails and all that would be there. And also that this would be a research resource that was for everybody, for its users, at no cost. So, you know, online database, I'm hearing both pronunciations tonight, so I better use both so I don't get up the noses of half the audience here. But I should emphasise that it's not just people who are interested in languages and linguistics. The AusNC is meant for historians, for sociologists, for social psychologists, as it says on its website, for people involved in cultural studies, anyone who's interested in, you know, Australian society and what makes it tick. You know, now, what I'm saying is what a small bunch of linguists and a small bunch of language technologists, what they've achieved in the last 3 years, I think is miraculous. And I'll just read you very brief descriptions, one-liners, of the nine corpora. Corpuses, that's another one, isn't it? If I say corpora, I'm going to get up the noses of half of you who thinks that's pretentious. And if I say corpuses, I'll get up the noses of the other half who think it's ill-informed. So I'll use both. Okay, they're already, you know, remarkably diverse, as you'll hear. So there's the Australian Corpus of English, ACE, nice acronym this one, has 1 million words of published text, so non-fiction and fiction, from the 1980s. There's the Australian Radio Talkback, this is ART. This is Talkback Radio from 2004 to 2006. So fabulous stuff, you know, from commercial radio stations and the ABC. There's AusLit, which gives people access to hundreds of examples of poetry and fiction and criticism from 1790s to the 1930s. There's a very interesting collection called Braided Channels, which is about 70 hours of oral history interviews. There's one with my favourite acronym of all. This is CUE. This is the Corpus of Oz Early English. This is material that was collected by Clements Fritz and has texts of all kinds, so including speech-based texts, so journals and letters, written in Australia, New Zealand or Norfolk Island between 1788 and 1900. This is a really very exciting record of early Australian English. There's the Griffith Corpus of Spoken English. You're going to have to work on this acronym, Michael. It's an unpronounceable one. And it's a collection of transcribed and annotated recordings of spoken interaction amongst Australian speakers of English, obviously. There's the ICE, International Corpus of English, which is another million-word corpus of transcribed, spoken and written Australian English from 1992 to 95. There's Mitchell and Delbridge, the MAD corpus. This is a wonderful database of recordings from Australian English spoken by 7,736 students at 330 schools across Australia and mostly collected in 1960. So like CUE, it's a corpus of real historical significance that's there. And then finally, there's the Monash Corpus of Spoken English, which also doesn't have a terribly nice acronym, a collection of recordings and transcriptions of interviews, as I said, of school children. I should just point out, since I've been talking about the OED, that it took something like 27 years, I think, before the first part of the dictionary appeared, and it was a 352 volume, I think, of words between A and ant. I mean, obviously we're looking at very different enterprises here, very different conditions, but I suppose what I want to emphasise is that they are Herculean efforts in both cases. But so, you know, what can you do with a corpus? This is all very well and good. What can you do with it? Lots of things, in fact. And as I emphasised earlier, this is a research resource. God, there are a lot of linguistic pitfalls in tonight's talk, where you put the stress on research for everybody. But because I'm a linguist, let me just mention things that are obviously linguistic. And I'll mention three things that I've been involved in. One is this idea of tracking or charting the lifespan of words, this that was the dream of Richard Trench originally. And this, of course, becomes so much easier in a corpus. Now, I get hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds, and I have them in my inbox, and this is using literally in the literal sense, not in the exaggerated sense. These are questions about word etymology and meanings of words. And one I asked about all the time, and I have been recently, which is what made me think of it, is this peculiar Australian expression to behave like a pork chop, which appeared in Australian English roughly in the 1950s. as a much longer expression to be like a pork chop in a synagogue. You know, obviously, a pork chop in a synagogue is something that's embarrassingly out of place. It's inappropriate. But the problem is that Australian English speakers have shortened the expression to behaving like a pork chop. And once you start doing that, of course, words will just go their own merry way. And what's happening now, I think, is it's shifting from inappropriateness to the idea of foolishness. But this is something you could actually look at in a corpus. You could test the currency of expressions. Who's using it and when? What does it exactly mean at the time? These are wonderful things you can do with this. There's also corpora, corpuses, are fabulous things for counting. You might remember in 2006, I think it was, when Tourism Australia launched that famous campaign, Where the Bloody Hell Are You? Do you remember that? Where you had, ordinary Australians set against beautiful, extraordinary scenes, and then there was that very Australian message at the bottom, Where the Bloody Hell Are You? Well, it managed to get censored in North America. It was banned, I think, in the UK, because of the word bloody. So Keith Allen, my colleague Keith Allen and I, a little bit later, decided we'd see what the corpus evidence said about bloody. So we looked at the art, the talkback corpus, and we found that bloody appeared, I think it was 6 times every 10,000 sentences. And then we looked in the ICE corpus at the conversational data in ICE, and we found that it was 20 times per 10,000 sentences, and we compared the New Zealand just to see what the Kiwis were doing, and it was only 7 times in comparable corpus, 7 times per 10,000 sentences. So, it really is the great Australian adjective, although it's not an adjective, I hasten to add. I could bore you with the tests for adjectivehood tonight, but I won't do that. And then just for interest, we decided to look at the London corpus to see what, how bloody featured there. And there it was, 27 times per 10,000 sentences. So we in the Antipodes lag very much behind Londoners in the use of bloody. So something very interesting was going on there in the banning of bloody. The third thing that I want to say was, yes, the historical application. Obviously, the current corpus, particularly with the incorporation of kui, is going to shed some very interesting light on early Australian English, on the linguistic processes that were happening there in the dialect melting pot in those very early years. And Clements Fritz, who has donated this corpus, has already done some wonderful things with it. But Simon Musgrave and I decided we'd look at it quite recently to see particularly the evidence for Irish English input in those early years. Now, I won't, this is not the venue to tell you what we found, or in fact what we didn't find. That was perhaps more interesting of what didn't appear in there. So use, for example, the plural you, or some of the other Irishisms. But in some ways, really, the work is just beginning. There are still lots of truly marvellous collections out there, a lot of them inaccessible. But I know that AusNC are very keen to encourage researchers to get their materials together. It takes time, and of course it takes money. So we're on the lookout for a mining magnate who has a passion for language and a passion for corpuses, or corpora, whatever, I don't mind. But at some stage we really do need to toast AusNC and its creators, because this is, after all, a birthday party for the corpus, and it needs to be celebrated.
The Chair of Linguistics at Monash University, Professor Kate Burridge, launching the Australian National Corpus at Griffith University in Brisbane last week. And wherever you are in the world, why don't you have a squiz at the AusNC yourself using the link on the program page for this Lingua Franca episode via RN's internet address. That's abc.net.au/radionational. I'm Maria Zylstra. Doch.